Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Thou Shalt Teach Them Diligently, was written by Joseph Mindell.
Whoa, whoa there. Is this the place, miss?
Yes, this is the place, driver.
A brand new building. What is it?
You can read it right over the door. Grammar School number 59.
This is the story of a teacher. She openeth her mouth in wisdom, and the law of kindness is on her tongue. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. This is the story of Julia Richmond, who came in November of the year 1872 to Grammar School number 59 in New York City and sat in the office of the principal.
Your class will be in the last room down the corridor, Miss Richmond. You'll start tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. I'll be here at 8.
Don't go yet. I'd like to ask you a question, that is, if you don't mind.
Oh, I don't mind.
Miss Richmond, why do you want to become a teacher?
Well, why does anybody want to become a teacher?
That's not an answer.
Does there have to be a reason?
There's always a reason. It's better to know it before you start.
I'm not sure, Mr. Gray. Maybe it's because there's so much to know.
I like your reason. I like it. Miss Richmond, are you frightened?
A little. I hoped you wouldn't notice.
Young lady, I'd be frightened, too, if tomorrow were my first day of teaching and I was 17 years old.
To be 17 and a teacher means that there is so much to know, so much to teach and to learn. The learning began the first day and continued every day with each day's problems.
Now, girls, the next question on the test is to have...
Miss Richmond.
Yes, Amy, what is it?
Miss Richmond, can I sharpen my pencil? The point broke.
Why, of course, Amy. Please don't drop the shavings on the floor. Now, the next question is to write the rule of multiplication by 6.
Miss Richmond, you mean the 6 times table?
Oh, yes, the 6 times table, Mary. In the meantime, I'll write some multiplication examples on the... Amy, where are you going now?
The point broke again.
What are you trying to do?
Nothing, Miss Richmond. It really broke again.
Now, come up here, Amy, and bring your test paper with you. Give it to me, please. There's nothing on it. Amy, you haven't answered a single question.
No, ma'am. She never does, Miss Richmond. Amy can't do arithmetic.
Or spelling, either.
Now, this does not concern the class. Please go on with your work.
But it's true, Miss Richmond. Isn't it so, Amy, isn't it?
Stop it. Now, stop it, all of you. Stop it. Finish your own test. Amy, we'll talk about it after school today. I won't say anything about the pencil.
I couldn't help it, Miss Richmond, honest.
Yes, I know, the point broke. But, Amy, you're 10 years old. You should know how to use a pencil by now.
Yes, ma'am.
And then the test. You'd studied the homework I gave the class.
But I did, Miss Richmond.
Now, Amy, how can you say that?
I studied the whole multiplication table. You don't believe me.
Well, I want to believe you, dear, but how can you explain the fact that you couldn't answer even one question? Well, aren't you going to say anything?
No, ma'am. I'm not going to say anything.
Amy, it isn't good to keep things that you want to say closed up inside of you.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry, Amy, but I think I'd better talk to your mother.
Sure, it's true, Miss Richmond. Amy did her homework. She does it every day.
Oh, poor Amy. I didn't believe her.
I sat right where you're sitting now, and she said the whole thing to me, right through the nine times table.
But not even one example right, Mrs. Furman.
Well, Amy just doesn't have a head for numbers, that's all.
And spelling?
It's true, she can't spell worth a nickel, but she... Miss Richmond, what are you trying to say?
I'm trying to find out, Mrs. Furman.
Amy is a good girl, Miss Richmond. What if she can spell or do arithmetic? She can do plenty of other things. Look there at the tablecloth on that table. Take it in your hands, Miss Richmond. Just look at it.
It's a beautiful cloth.
Amy embroidered it. All by herself, working on it for weeks. Sitting there right there in that rocker, afternoons and evenings. Just look at it,
Mrs. Furman, you don't have to prove anything.
And Mrs. Schwartz next door and Mrs. Thompson upstairs, all the neighbors, they leave their babies with Amy. Do you understand what that means, Miss Richmond? They trust her more than anybody else.
Mrs. Furman, while Amy is embroidering or taking care of the neighbor's babies, as you say, the other little girls are out playing. Why isn't Amy playing with them?
Well, maybe she's more settled, more responsible. Maybe that's the reason.
And maybe she doesn't remember the jumping rhymes. Maybe she can't learn the games that they play.
You're saying that my Amy is different from everybody else?
Well, of course she's different. No two children are alike. But for us, the question is, how is she different?
What concern is it of yours?
I'm her teacher. I have to know. You're her mother, Mrs. Furman.
Do you think I don't know? Do you think I haven't known almost from the beginning? Why did you have to drag it out? Why don't you leave us alone?
If you and I don't help Amy, who will? Mrs. Furman, do we demand of a lame child that she run, or of a blind child that she see?
Never stops making demands on a child. And what is required of a teacher? Not to teach subtraction or grammar or ancient history. It is required of a teacher to teach a child. In the year 1872, long before others, Julia Richmond understood what was required of her. As she walked home through the streets after school, she understood, too, how difficult was the task.
Good afternoon, Miss Richmond.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hello, Amy.
Hello, Mrs. Barnett.
Hey, are you feeling all right, Miss Richmond? You look a little gray.
I guess I'm a little tired.
Well, you want to take care of yourself. Well, Amy, how are you doing in school?
All right, Mrs. Barnett.
Well, that's good. Guess you can't expect too much of her, can you, Miss Richmond?
Amy, would you run down to the corner, dear, and buy me a paper? Here's a penny.
Well, you didn't have to send Amy away. She doesn't understand.
I think she does understand.
Well, it's very nice of you to stick up for her, but after all, she's slow.
Mrs. Barnett, Amy has feelings like any other child, like your little girl, Jane.
There's no need to drag my Jane into this.
But Jane is in it. I think it's wrong for Jane to talk about Amy in class and... Well, I think it's wrong for you to talk the way you did, whether Amy is here or not.
Miss Richmond, I'm old enough to be your mother. You don't have to teach me right and wrong.
No, I don't. My job is to teach Amy and Jane and all the children to respect themselves and each other. And I think it's your job, too.
To teach a child that to which he is entitled, because he is a child, because he is a person. Julia Richmond knew her goal, but she did not know how to reach it. She continued to teach subjects.
Now, someday, girls, you'll study algebra. I want to tell you a little something about it. Now, algebra is like a... Well, it's like a language for numbers.
Miss Richmond?
Yes, Mary?
You mean a language like French or Spanish?
Well, no, not exactly. It's, a way of talking about numbers.
Then it's not really a language.
Well, many people call it a special kind of language.
Miss Richmond, say something in algebra.
Well, I don't see that it's so funny, Mr. Gray.
Don't you, Julia? Imagine that it happened to me instead of you. You see what I mean?
Yes. Well, all right, I guess it was funny. Mr. Gray.
Yes?
There are two other girls in my class like Amy, living under a handicap as real as the physical defects of other children.
There are children like them in almost every class, Julia.
Well, why do we inflict upon them the rules for pronouns and the exports of Venezuela?
Well, you have to think of the rest of the class.
I'm thinking of the whole class. It isn't enough to teach the majority. I want to teach each girl something within her capacity to achieve and her...
Don't stop, Julia. You're doing fine.
Mr. Gray, I came to your office to give you my resignation.
I refuse to accept
it. No, I withdraw it. I think I have an idea. Jane, would you mind bringing my apron from the closet, please? Thank you.
It's a pretty apron. Isn't it, girls?
I think so, too. Amy made it, you know. That is, she embroidered it.
Did you, Amy? Did you embroider it?
Uh-huh.
Who helped you?
Nobody helped me. I did it myself.
It sure is pretty.
I wish I knew how to embroider.
Maybe Miss Richmond can show us how.
Oh, I'm afraid not, Jane. I was never very good at embroidery.
Well, what about you, Amy? Would you teach her?
Why are you laughing, Jane?
Oh, nothing. You want me to teach you how to embroider, Mary?
Well, sure, Amy. Tell me where you keep your needle and thread. I'll get it for you.
Thanks. Gee, thanks.
Come to resign again, Julia?
Oh, no, Mr. Gray. I want you to buy needles and thread for embroidery and some cotton cloth.
Have your list. Tell me, what has happened to the rules for pronouns?
Well, they're still in effect and still being violated.
Julia, I'm a little worried. What you're doing is extremely unorthodox.
Teaching girls to sew? It's been done for years.
No. Not teaching them pronouns and arithmetic and the rest.
But I am teaching them pronouns and arithmetic and the rest, Mr. Gray. To the girls who can cope with them. The others are learning other things to the fullest extent of their own, but different capacities.
But after all, embroidery...
What's wrong with it?
Julia, embroidery is not an end in itself.
Mr. Gray, neither is the multiplication table.
Only the child is an end in itself. Julia Richmond knew her goal, and now she also knew a way in which it might be reached. But there were obstacles in the way.
Julia, about the report card you gave Amy.
Yes, Mr. Gray.
Relax, Julia. This isn't going to be a fight. You marked her excellent in conduct.
She's a good girl.
Yes, and you marked her work good.
That's right.
Has Amy learned the six times table?
You know very well she hasn't. She's done the work I gave her, though, and she's done it very well.
Julia, there is a certain standard for all children.
But you can't have one standard for all children. You cannot squeeze every child into the same mold.
Don't you see that we have to start with basic requirements, with principles?
Mr. Gray, I think we have to start with the child. I think every child has to be free to develop to his limits in his...
You are stubborn, Julia.
No, I'm right.
Sometimes that means the same thing. Julia, are you ready for some trouble?
Of course. What kind of trouble?
Some parents are waiting for you in the next room. They appear to be rather angry. Do you want me to go with you?
No, thank you, Mr. Craig. I'll talk to the parents alone.
Miss Richmond, I have a complaint to make. That's why I'm here.
I lose 3 hours' pay today, but I come too.
And what's troubling you, Mrs. Barnett?
Jane's report card. That's what it is.
You're not pleased with it?
Miss Richmond, Jane brings me her tests. Arithmetic, spelling, geography, all of them. I see the marks. 85, 90, 87. And what do you mark her work on the report card?
Well, I marked her good.
That's right. The same as Amy Furman. And everybody knows that
Amy... Mrs. Barnett... All I know is that Jane and Amy are two different children.
Excuse, please.
A mark's a mark. Now, teacher's got to be fair.
Does it take away from Jane's achievement if Amy's mark is the same as hers?
You're playing favorites. Jane learns more. Her mark should be higher.
But school shouldn't be a competition. A mark isn't a verdict. Mrs. Barnett, you read the Bible, I'm sure. Perhaps you know that verse in the Psalms. Thou renderest to every man... according to his work. To every child, too, Mrs. Barnett, according to her own self.
Excuse, please, sir. I have to go back to work.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I don't know from marks. Miss Richmond, you are a fine lady. Please, you do something.
Certainly. What would you like me to do?
My wife, she teach Lily sewing. Miss Richmond, you teach Lily numbers.
I'm just trying to help Lily be a happy little person.
That's good, Miss Richmond. But you teach her numbers, too.
Mr. Berkovich, how do you make a living?
Me?
Yes.
I bricklayer.
Yes. Well, suppose they put you in a watchmaker shop and told you to fix watches.
Oh, no. I cannot do. My fingers is, it's too thick.
And what about Lily, sitting in a room all day trying to do something for which her fingers is too thick?
Miss Richmond, I go build a wall with bricks. You take care of my Lily.
She was 17 when she came to teach, and she had much to learn. But she chose reality rather than abstraction, the child instead of principles. Year by year, she drew closer to the lives of the children, of their parents, of the community in which they live.
It is so much easier to teach the oath of allegiance to the flag than to teach a community to keep the fire escapes free of encumbrances. But this, too, must be done.
She became a teacher not only of children, but of their parents as well, and sometimes of others. One day in September of 1884, she sat once again in the principal's office.
Julia, this is Mr. Williams, district superintendent of schools.
We've met, Mr. Gray. Miss Richmond, I'd like you to tell me about your idea.
I'll be very happy to do so. Which idea do you mean?
You think that handicapped children should be separated in special classes. Why?
Well, Mr. Williams, you see, no one likes to be reminded of the things that he can't do. Children feel ashamed at being outstripped, mentally or physically, by other children.
Well, the handicaps still exist, even if the children are separated.
That's quite right, but they can be free to develop their own interests. At their own speed, you see, without comparisons, without demands from the world.
Oh, yes, I see. All right, Miss Richmond, go ahead.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Williams?
Try it. Separate the retarded children.
You mean I can put Amy and Lily and the others in a special class?
No, not these children, not here.
Oh, I'd be very reluctant to leave this school and this neighborhood.
Miss Richmond, even for your own school? As principal?
Here we are, ma'am. Grammar school number 77.
Yes, thank you, driver.
That'll be 50 cents. Thank you, ma'am. Get up now. Come
on. Driver!
Yeah. Whoa, there.
Aren't you going to wish me luck?
Me? Well, sure. Good luck to you, lady.
In the fall of 1884, the youngest principal in the city, age 29, came to her new school. There were Amy's and Lily's in the school, and they were gathered into special classes. Now Julia Richmond taught teachers how to help these children find themselves. Slowly there grew a kind of peace and restfulness that surprised other principals.
Miss Richmond, how do you manage to get enough money for your broken window fund?
My what?
Money to repair the windows broken by the pupils.
I see. We don't teach window breaking at my school.
If she had thought it would help the children, she might well have instituted a course in window breaking. Only one precept seemed to be needed.
No one is expected to do what it is impossible for him to do.
Julia Richmond was principal for 19 years. Later, she was appointed the first woman district superintendent. Even then, she devoted herself to leadership in religious education, with the Hebrew Free School Association, the Council of Jewish Women, the Educational Alliance. But this does not describe the richness of a full life. There remains to be told how one day there came to her office a young woman.
You don't remember me, Miss Richmond.
Amy, of course I do. How nice to see you again.
I came to tell you something.
Something good, I can tell from your face.
Miss Richmond, I'm going to be married next month.
Oh, Amy.
You know that, well, I was never good at saying things. I really came to tell you. Oh, thanks, Miss Richmond. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes, Amy. I know what you mean.
She openeth her mouth in wisdom, and the law of kindness is on her tongue. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gate. Words for Julia Richmond, teacher, who knew what children meant.
The world rests upon the breath of the children in the schoolhouse.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Edward Kronsberg, member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary. Mr. Kronsberg.
I have been invited to tell you something of a historic anniversary in American Jewish life, which is being celebrated in Charleston, South Carolina. The bicentennial celebration of 1950 stands not only as a commemoration of two centuries of Jewish life in Charleston, but as a symbol, a demonstration of the spirit of understanding and mutual respect which has existed in this new world. The Jews of Charleston, together with their fellow citizens of all faiths, are celebrating their bicentennial as one of the oldest Jewish communities in America. Its community celebration of this 200th birthday will include special exhibitions at the Carolina Art Association and the Charleston Museum, a review of the new historical and sociological books, The Jews of Charleston, by Charles Reznikoff, tours, banquets, religious service, and special performances of a play with music written and produced by Sam Bird. With other organizations and groups taking part in the bicentennial throughout the year, many figures from the past will again have a day of remembrance. Jewish leaders in commerce, science, politics, as well as artists, writers, doctors, lawyers, and judges will be noted for the integral part they played in the life of Charleston. In 1790, when George Washington was inaugurated as the first president of the United States, Jacob Cohen, then president of Beth Elohim, wrote him a letter of congratulations. In his reply, Washington said, "The liberality of sentiment toward each other, which marks every political and religious denomination of man in this country, stands unparalleled in the history of nations. May the same temporal and external blessings which you implore for me rest upon your congregation. Spirit expressed in Washington's letter to the Jews in Charleston has endured. Jews have lived here in peace and security for more than 200 years, in harmony with their neighbors and in active participation in the life of the community and country. This is not only a tribute to the Jews, but a tribute to the spirit of Charleston and the American dream."
Thank you, Mr. Kronsberg. Eternal Light Drama today, Thou Shalt Teach Them Diligently, was written by Joseph Mindell. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Caton. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Joan Alexander was featured as Julia Richmond, and Alexander Scurby was the narrator. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated station. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.